Support for KQED Podcasts comes from Star One Credit Union, now offering real-time money movement with Instant Pay. Make transfers and payments instantly between financial institutions. Online or through Star One's mobile app. Star One Credit Union, in your best interest.
From KQED.
Mic check, check one, check two. Are we here? All right, we're here right now-ish.
My name is Pendarvis Harshaw, and I grew up in the midst of the hyphy movement. The scrapers getting sideways, those airbrushed t-shirts, them big stunner shades, all of that. That was my teenage experience.
Oh yeah, you understand me? Town business, right?
If you listen closely, you can hear me behind the camera. Filming the classic footage of Oakland A's mascot Stomper going dumb. That was at the record release party for E-40's My Ghetto Report Card. Arguably the height of the hyphy movement. Yeah, so, you know, I get to feeling old when I realize that kids born during that era are now in college. And with this new generation of young adults, what's old is new again. I'm hearing musicians sample elements of songs that I grew up gigging to, rappers talking about bringing hyphy back, and even references to what came before hyphy, mob music, and before that, funk music. That said, I think it's time for a Bay Area musical history lesson. And who better to chop it up with than the Cool Collar Scholar himself, the honor roll producer who has worked with Jay Stylin, Kamaya, Mr. Fab, and so many more. His name is Trackademics, and he knows a thing or two about hip-hop history in this region.
The energy in the Bay Area was so thick.
We talk about the hip-hop legacy of Northern California, the etymology of the term hyphy, as well as why it's important to know your history if you're looking to make some music that slaps. We'll be back quicker than the time that it takes you to go to the store to get some Henny, some Swishers, and some Listerine strips. Ugh.
Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. Some want it all. SFO wants zero. Zero landfill waste, net carbon, and net energy by 2030. Learn more about the triple zero goal at flysfo.com.
What's the first hyphy song you ever heard?
I'd have to say that E-40's album, it had Gasoline with Turf Talk. That's when I first started hearing like, oh, this is an actual crazy sound, like the hyphy sound. And Turf Talk's voice next to E-40's voice. Just kind of created this crazy tone where it's just like unruly. It was in your face. The beats by Rick Rock.
Hold up. Shout out Rick Rock, the Northern California producer behind the classic old school songs, contemporary hits, and a ton of songs from major hip hop artists like Tupac, Jay-Z, and even this song from Busta Rhymes and Mariah Carey. Rick Rock was one of the producers who laid the cornerstone to the hyphy sound. He produced songs like Hyphy and Go Dumb by The Federation, as well as E-40's Yay Area.
Like that? Tell the people that Phony Water is back.
He was making crazy beats. He was making like more up-tempo songs with wacky sounds, crazy percussion. This is something different. It's hyphy. I mean, we didn't have the terminology yet, but it slapped.
Hyphy. The word was said on record by East Oakland's Keek the Sneak in the mid-90s.
That's my word. Hyphy.
And gained popularity in the early 2000s.
I don't put that on. That's my word.
But in the early days, when Keek started using it, hyphy didn't mean what it means now.
He's the one who created the hyphy terminology. Because in Oakland, hyphy didn't mean fun. Hyphy meant they hyphy over there. Like, I'm trying to go over there. Yeah, they might rob you. They might. You never know what's going on.
Right. No, that's a hyphy dog. I'm staying away from it. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, but as language does, the term evolved to mean hyperactive in a good way. Full of exuberant energy, you know, like the life of the party.
It's pure energy. It's not even a clap sound or a ghost riding whips and all that. It's pure energy. If you think about what was going on around the rest of the country, like the only thing really comparable energy wise in the party was Atlanta. At that time, they were into the crunk. Crunk was popping. We have our own version of like high speed, energetic crunk you know, energy. It didn't sound the same necessarily, but just it was a comparable energy. It all sounded like clear liquor in the, you know, like vodka cranberries and vodka Red Bulls in the club.
Oh, I can taste it. Oh, it's so bad. Hypey juice.
A lot of sugar, high fructose, and alcohol.
The hypey sound in the mid-2000s didn't come out of nowhere. It was a combination of the energy of the people and the evolution of music styles happening locally. To start us off, back in the day, there was funk music. The heavy bass and synthesizers shifted into a darker tone, becoming mob music.
Mob shit, bitch.
That sound got juiced up and grew into what we know as hyphy. Same bass, more tempo, not as dark, and a lot more fun.
The generations of Bay Area rap are so thick. So like in the 80s, if like you had prehistoric mob music, I call it prehistoric, you know, Cro-Magnon mob music, where a lot of that was influenced from like, you know, East Coast rap like Houdini. Specifically here, it's just the bass lines and the ominous sounds. The Moog synths and the different synthesizers that they were using back then. And so that's the first iteration, like that mob, the 80s, you know, too short sound.
Now I come from the Oakland town. Task force rolling rock, coke crack down.
But also very, like, influenced by the funk music, Ohio funk.
Everyone knows Short sampled Parliament Funkadelic and James Brown, but it's the deep cuts that show just how foundational the funk was. Tracks like The Conscious Daughter's Something to Ride To, Funky Expedition. That song is built off a sample of the SOS band's No One's Going to Love You.
As it went through to the late 90s, mob music started reinterpolating a lot of things.
Bay Area living is only known to flex.
It had a lot of musicians like Ant Banks, Kyrie, producing very like lavish, I guess, productions.
The mob era came with different flavors from all across Northern California. Similarly, the hyphy movement had different flavors from different towns too. There was them hood stars from East Palo Alto, Jay Stylin and Live Wire Records out of West Oakland, and the Federation out of Fairfield, to name a few. And many artists had careers that spanned both mob music and the hyphy movement, like Too Short, E-40, and this one guy whose birth name is Andre Hicks. But you might know him as the Frilly Ghost, Ronald Dragan,
Thizzle Washington, Andre Mackesy, the Cold Crest Creeper,
or simply...
They call me Mac Dre and I'm keeping the name. I sport Nike shoes, I got a mic to use to talk bad about something.
The thing that he brought was the energy of hyphy, the caricature, the character of hyphy. He kind of set the ground rules or the groundwork of like the fun aspect of it. And then as the music started to catch up with Rick Rock and E-40 bringing that actual sonic sound of hyphy, that connected with the characters that Mac Dre gave Fab in the 2000s.
Mac Dre forever, man. I don't know what they heard.
The baton from Mac Dre was kind of passed to like Mr. Fab in that regard and everybody else.
So I could touch myself. The game's so sharp, I might cut myself.
Is there something about the region that breeds this sound?
All of the different influences have created this thing because we weren't the first ones to start rapping or the first ones to do funk music. When you're not the first, you're kind of informed and you're like, oh, okay, I'm gonna put this twist on it.
It's funny that you said it, of all people, that like when you're not the first, you create a twist, you remix it essentially, which I mean is what hip hop is about. Like you take it, you do a sample, you scratch it your own way, you know, you flip it and you put your own flavor in it. But also that's literally like how you made your mark in the game. Bring me to one of your more notable productions, the remix of Tell Me When to Go. How did that come about?
That was early 2006. And I remember the energy was crazy in the Bay Area. It was like a pressure cooker and things were like speeding up. The day that the Tell Me When to Go vinyl dropped, I specifically went in with the intent, like, I'm going to remix this because there's a lot of friends I know, like, who are not from my area, you know, not from the Bay Area, who don't understand the Bay Area culture. They heard the song Tell Me When to Go, and they're like, it's just drums. There's no music, or there's like no samples, or there's no like, it's not, that's not creative. And I'm like, y'all are tripping. It's a culture that you don't understand. And so I was like, well, I'm going to remix this, and with the intent that y'all going to get this Bay Area music. Y'all are going to respect us. In my studio, I used to produce on these car speakers, on these old like tins, these 10-inch subwoofers. And I placed the acapella on top of the beat. My face melted. You know, like, there's only a few times where you like automatically know you have a hit. At the time, I was working at Youth Radio in the training department.
Trackademics. Tell me when to go. Tell me when to go.
I went and brought my remix and gave it out to the students at Youth Radio. At the time, things didn't go viral. They just went on your MySpace player. And so I had put the song on my MySpace. Everyone started adding it to their MySpaces. And then, you know, next I heard people were playing it in their high school gym, like rallies, and students would bring me video back showing me, you know, like, look, it's going crazy. And like that next, like maybe 3 months was just insane. Wildfire.
Hey, it's that song where like the whole club would go stupid. And this is like club, I'm saying club. Like, let me get it right. Candy shop function. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's where I was. I was 18, 19.
18 dummy.
Going 18 dummy, right?
I knew that as long as I kept the knock in it, the pound, you know, the bottom, it would stand up sonically in the function.
Is there a major philosophy to remixing things?
I'm born and raised in the Bay Area. I'm from Alameda. It's right next to Oakland. I call it the island off the coast of the town. Me, I'm half black and Filipino. That's a uniquely Bay Area remix. I mean, we're everywhere, but like the Bay has a very big community of folks like us. So I feel like for me, that's kind of like the backdrop. Like, I've always been in between a lot of things. You know, growing up in Alameda, wasn't a lot of black folks, and even Filipinos where I lived. And so it was like, I got to get in where I fit in. And I felt like remixing was the same way. I like so many types of music growing up, and I kind of wanted to put them all together. Anita Baker, like the old school stuff I like, and Sade. When it came to remixing, it was also like trying to create something different than the original, but just as good. Not trying to necessarily do something better or like that beat was whack. It's more of like, okay, well, this is where the original sits. Let me try to do something adjacent to that that people might not have been thinking about.
Got you. Okay. That's the philosophy that went behind the work. And who are some of the early artists that you work with?
I used to give out CDs a lot. And the first person that took me seriously was Mr. Fab. Fab called me the next day on his way to Summer Jam. And he was like, hey, bro, this CD slap. These beats, you know, he's like, they're different, man. He's like, but he kept saying, he's like, we got to connect. We got to connect. He was working on what would become Son of a Pimp. And I ended up producing 6 tracks on there. I did Chris the Fifth's first mixtape. I did 6 tracks on there on the masterpiece.
Classic mixtape. Like, that's a hood classic.
Having someone as talented as Chris the Fifth and Fab and all them like rap on your beats, it wakes it up all the way where you're like, oh, I think I can actually do this, you know?
What's going on right now in terms of Bay Area sound?
It's all like a post-mob and hyphy sound kind of mixed together. So you have a lot of like the slap and kind of the general rhythmic disposition that's similar. We're back to like the ominous chords and like the pianos. It's undeniable that the sonic backdrop of it all is a direct descendant of the older Bay Area music. Even someone like Rex Life Raj, where it's like, it's almost like soulful mob or soulful hyphy. It amazes me how much it stays ingrained in our music. And I believe that it's gonna stay because it actually has influenced the whole landscape of music. We'll
Big time appreciation to Alameda's own Trackademics. The Cool Collar Scholar came through and blessed us with a history lesson that Ken Burns would tip his hat to. Oh, and I should be clear, Trackademics isn't stuck in the past. He's still active.
Most namely to come out soon is my homie LDs, who's from Oakland. We're just bringing back the old school Oakland sound. Just like hyphy, mobbed out slaps.
To all of you listening out there, be sure to follow Trackademics on social media for updates on his work. You can find him under Trackademics, that's spelled Trackademics. And that's on Instagram and Twitter. Marisol Medina Cadena is the producer of this show. The editors of this episode are Jessica Platchik and Vanessa Roncagno. Our engineer is Seal Muller. Kiana Mogadam and Sarah Pineda make up the engagement team. KQED execs are Erica Aguilar, David Marcus, and Holly Kernan. I'm your host, Pendarvis Harshaw, reminding y'all that there's no better feeling than going dumb with your friends.
Yay!
Right Now-ish is a KQED production.
Do you love your local bookstore? Well, I have the perfect event for you. This Saturday, April 27th, is Independent Bookstore Day. It's a day to celebrate your favorite local bookstore. I'm Olivia Allen Price, host of the Bay Curious podcast here at KQED, and I'm popping in to let you know that we will be hosting an event at Green Apple Books in San Francisco for the occasion. Come out for an author Q&A about the Bay Curious book. We'll be playing some Bay Area-themed trivia. There will be prizes and so much more. And the best part, tickets are donation-based, and all proceeds go to the Prisoners Literature Project. Learn more at kqed.org/live. I hope to see you there.